This is head coach of the LA Lakers, Luke Walton. You're listening to The Popcorn Machine on Lakers.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Popcorn Machine on Lakers.com. Joey Ramirez here in Los Angeles, and out on the road in Oklahoma City is Mike Trudell. What's up, Mike?
Joey, how are you? This is day 9 of the longest trip of the year. Got one day left tomorrow, and the Lakers are 2-2 so far, which is not bad.
Yeah, not too bad. National TV tomorrow against OKC. A little build up to the Super Bowl. Do you guys have plans out there for the Super Bowl yet?
Yeah, the plan is to be on the plane for almost the entirety of the Super Bowl.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, Luke Walton took a lot of grief, mostly from Michael Thompson, about the timing of this. But you know, look, Luke can't control when the tip off times are, and it just so happens to, since it's a day game, of course, the team has to, as always in these type of situations, Joey, go straight to the airport to get back to Los Angeles as soon as possible. So, you know, the only way to really get around that would have been if they had, this is Michael Thompson's suggestion, to get back to the hotel, right, and to have some ballroom or whatever figured out or tricked out with televisions and food and things along those lines. That was the big plan that Michael, I think, put towards the decision makers, and it sounds like it was not met with much veracity, and we will instead be going back. So, look, I'm still bummed out personally as a Vikings fan. It's in Minnesota without my team being in it. I will watch like everybody else, but I'm not nearly as bummed had it been the actual Vikings in it. I think that would have been totally different.
That's a fair point. Do we have any big Eagles or Patriots fans out there on the road with you guys right now? I can't really. Josh Hart went to school in Philly, but Kuz was there for a year prep.
No, Hart's a Redskins fan. Yeah, he's from the DMV area, so he does not like the Eagles. There isn't any direct tie from the players for one of those two teams, other than Kobe Bryant.
Sure.
We all know who he's going to be rooting for.
Mm-hmm.
So Jonah Hershu, who is one of the assistant video coordinator, and that job is, by the way, a very important one for NBA teams. You know, a lot of the current head coaches, like Eric Spoelstra, for example, started in as the video coordinator. He is a big Boston sports fan from that area, so he's kind of the one that's going to be cheering the most. But no, other than that, man, not any direct ties on the team side.
All right, then I guess we'll move to basketball in that case. How are we feeling, like you said, 4 games into this road trip, 2 wins, 2 losses, coming off a win against Brooklyn? What would you say is the overall temperature of how this trip has gone?
Well, look, I think the win last night in Brooklyn was big because the way that the trip started was a continuation of that really pretty good play at home in which the Lakers won the 3 consecutive games. The defense was good. They were able to sustain that for the most part in Chicago. And, of course, that became the 4th straight win. And it seemed like they had found somewhat of a recipe, Joey, to play without Lonzo Ball. Then they got to Toronto and ran into just a really good team. 123-111, I think, was the final score. And it wasn't that they played poorly. It's just that Toronto was good, and it wasn't a particularly good effort from the Lakers. And then you go to Orlando and have what you could argue is the worst all-around game of the season. There are probably a couple of other candidates, especially during that losing streak. And, you could point to, I'm trying to think, maybe the Memphis loss at home.
Kings loss was pretty bad,
there was the first game of the season, but then a couple of other games against the Clippers. But, it was a 127-105 loss to a team that was without 2 of its regular starters, and that just wasn't much energy. And I did kind of – it sensed to me like they were getting back into that place where they were just rudderless. And I mean that in terms of not having Lonzo Ball, not having somebody to direct the flow of traffic. And, Luke Walton, I think you got to give a lot of credit to the coaching staff where they got creative with the starting lineup and they put Josh Hart in, essentially moving Brandon Ingram to a point guard role. And that just sustained itself to a nice win in Brooklyn. And look, think about the Oklahoma City game tomorrow. It's going to be a tough one. The Thunder have lost a couple games in a row. They're angry. They always seem to match the energy level of the Lakers, which is how this season the Lakers have won a lot of games, by just being more competitive, playing harder defensively, running in transition. And when you have Russell Westbrook on your team, it's just really tough to get an edge in any one of those categories. And the Thunder are one of the few teams that is just physically stronger than the Lakers at most positions. And that's just a tough matchup, basically. So you know, you're looking, if you don't find a way to pull that Brooklyn game out, that could have been a theoretical four game losing streak and right back to feeling bad. Instead, you know, the Lakers split the trip so far. They get two more wins against Eastern Conference teams. In fact, that's five wins against the East now in the past couple of weeks. You had Indiana, New York, Boston, Chicago, and now Brooklyn. And I think that really sets the Lakers at a much better overall place, Joey, and they have to be pleased in that facet to still be without Lonzo, not even have a backup point guard that they're confident in starting, and still find a way to win a road game against a Brooklyn team that does play well in their own building, that plays hard. And so I think that for those reasons, the Lakers are probably feeling pretty good right now, all things considered.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing right now, is that it's been 3 weeks without Lonzo, and they've kind of figured out at least how to keep the ship afloat without him, as opposed to those first, what was it, eight games that they lost when Lonzo didn't play. And now it's kind of, I think they're around, like, do you know the record that they are since those first eight? Is it like 4-2?
So without Lonzo, they started 0-8, then they won the four straight, then they lost two, and then they just won the most recent one.
So after the
original eight losses, so mm-hmm. which is pretty good, you know, without Lonzo, all things considered, and especially how they started. And that's I think everybody hopes, although we certainly don't know this, that Lonzo's able to return when the team returns home, but he's going to have to get a good practice in before that. I'm curious to see if he's able to do anything at today's practice, Joey. It's not a full practice, right? It's going to be more of kind of a walkthrough. Because they have the early game against Oklahoma City tomorrow. So it may not be a true test, but if there's anything, we'll certainly have that for you in the pregame show tomorrow on Lake Show and Access Sportsnet on Spectrum, of course. So if there's a Lonzo update then, if not, we'll have to wait till Monday and see if Luke has any of the guys come in. But look, here's the other complicating factor. A lot of times when the team's been gone for 10 days, you know, he won't make everybody come in on the immediate day after.
Right.
Because that's usually when you at least get to go home and, you know, get a change of clothes right before the game on Tuesday. So in towards that end, you know, we aren't sure if Lonzo's going to be able to play in that game either. And that's the one thing that keeps standing out in this trip is it's just unfortunate you haven't gotten to see Lonzo Ball back in action.
Yeah. And one thing that stood out to me is that there really hasn't been a very go-to sense of plan B when Lonzo does go down, what happens to the point guard position. We've seen Tyler Ennis in the starting lineup. We've seen Jordan Clarkson and Alex Caruso paired with one another and then split apart. And then we've seen Brandon Ingram in this last game get the start at point guard and kind of be that primary playmaker. And it's interesting to see the Lakers try to figure that out on the fly when you don't have a guy who's so fundamental to the identity of your team as Lonzo is. The lens I try to view it in is... Well, for the next X amount of years, the Lakers are likely going to have Lonzo Ball. So, the 3 weeks that they don't have him, nobody's really going to remember in the long term. So, if you take a long term view at it, you're really thinking of, okay, well, if Lonzo comes back, what do we learn in these 3 weeks that can be applied to when he is in the lineup? And I think what we've learned is that they kind of have a variety of options. When it comes to, or at least two main options, I think is what we've learned. You have Brandon Ingram being a playmaker, and you have JC and Caruso kind of playing off each other. And those two things aren't always going to be clicking on a given night. We've seen Alex and Jordan struggle a little bit since they had that nice little run together. And Brandon obviously he's a small forward who's being asked to be a playmaker. So it's very interesting to see that kind of progression, at least in my eyes.
It is. The way that I would look at it, so Lonzo Ball, what he does is not replicable by almost anybody in the NBA. He's just a unique player. He isn't somebody that if he goes out, you just plug another 3-and-D guy in, or if you just plug another power forward that's versatile.
Right.
You know, like take Julius Randle and Larry Nance Jr. They're much different players, but if one is out, you can kind of plug the other one in, and you know, you're still going to be able to switch 1 through 5. You know, sure, Larry's not going to be able to do as much offensively on his own as Julius, but he'll sort of do some other things to approximate it. And when you lose Lonzo Ball, there's just nobody that's going to have that type of awareness and vision and playmaking. And it almost stinks to talk about it right now because it's been a month almost, well, not a month, but 3 weeks since we've actually even seen him on the court. So, mm-hmm. I can barely remember what happened last week, let alone 3 weeks ago. We're already having to sort of challenge ourselves there. But yet and still, you know, even while he's been out and they've been able to tack on some of these wins here, I was looking at last year's schedule. So they didn't win their 20th game until March 9th. And you can almost add a week to that because the season started earlier this year, right? So say it was essentially that becomes like a March 15th or something time. And by that time, the Lakers had 48 losses, right? So this year, right, they are 20-31. And that's with that 9-game stretch in December where they could have, should have, would have. We've talked about it many times in the podcast and in other places. Won at least a couple of those games. So even though they haven't really had a ton of veteran help, and that, I say that with apologies because Brook Lopez had a good game last night. He certainly was key in getting them that win in Brooklyn. But they, you know, their best players, and you could almost argue their five best players have all been young guys. Certainly, probably their four best players, and that's just a credit, Joey, I think, to how the young guys are embracing, you know, what the coaches are putting out there, how they're buying in defensively, how they're giving this type of effort that was just not quite there to the same level last year. And that is encouraging because when you think about who's going to be here long term and which of these young pieces, eventually when your best couple of players, and I don't know if it's this summer, I don't know if it's next summer, I don't know if it's going to be through a trade or free agency or whatever, when you're paying the biggest money, and right now it's Brook Lopez, KCP, right at the top of that money train, and Luol Deng, when that money is going to players that are, you know, really making an impact on the court every night, you would think that the team is going to be that much better when the young guys are still getting paid what they're getting paid. And
yeah,
that's the sort of the way that I'm looking at things big picture right now and the reason for optimism.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with all that. You even look at Boston and how they have veterans that are kind of leading the way, and then you have the young guys who are elevated by the veterans' performance. And the Lakers are kind of – they're sort of in that with Brook Lopez on certain nights, like last night when he was playing really well. But again, they're the youngest team in the league. They don't, outside of Brook, you know, we think of KCP as a vet, but he's, I think, 24, 25 years old. He's only been in the league for 4 or 5 years. It's interesting to see. It will be interesting to see how this team performs when they do have some veterans on the squad. One number that's really stuck out to me that I just noticed was when Brandon Ingram has 5 assists or more, the Lakers are 10-5. Do you have a theory as to why that they find team success when Brandon is in that facilitator mode?
Well, so those, when you can pull a stat like that in many, like, if Julius, you know, when Julius Randle grabs 12 rebounds, right, or something like that, like, I'm guessing Lakers record is pretty good. When Brook Lopez hits, you know, 4 or 5 threes. So basically when a guy is doing something that he's capable of but doesn't do every time, the team is going to be better. And that's just one answer to, I'm not trying to diminish the number, but here's maybe a better way. So Luke Walton was asked this last night, and I think I said something about, you know, what do you look for differently when Ingram is out there without Lonzo, and how much can you prescribe for him as a playmaker? And Luke said one of the reasons why they do it is because it forces Brandon to be involved in the plays. And it's not, you know, this is not to take the other extreme and to say that he floats or that he isn't always involved, because that's not the case. You know, Ingram has for the most part been pretty aggressive overall, especially compared to last season, and he's still just 20 years old. But when you are putting him on the ball and you are, in Luke's mind, sort of forcing him to get up and down the court with pace, he's such a talent that other teams are going to notice that. They're going to have to pay attention to him. And then not only is he 6'9 and able to, you know, spread the ball around because he can see all over the court, but he's a willing passer and he wants to make the right play. And he's not just going to look for his own stuff. And so I think, therefore, if he's in the role where he's going to get 5 assists, that usually means that he's more involved in the game. Because sometimes you could have him reach 20 points, and that could just be by, you know, getting some spot-up shots, attacking weak side closeouts, getting to the foul line. So stuff that where, you know, he could get involved individually. And I guess my best way to put this is take a counterexample. Lou Williams, you know, who sometimes can get 20 points with just a few touches, that can help your team in one sense, but it also can come, you know, at a cost of, you know, he's not necessarily involved in other ways other than just getting the ball and then going to try to do something with it. And the team play isn't evolving in the same way. And so I think those are all sort of can give you at least a hint as to why the team would be better when Brandon is involved like that. Joey, although since you looked up the stat, I'm sure that you have an added perspective on this. So what do you think the reason is?
So first of all, I do agree with what you said about, you know, having Brandon on the ball, having him be involved more, and Luke's kind of said the same thing too. I would push back on is making it a kind of equal to Julius getting 12 rebounds or Brooke.
Push me.
I would push back on that because getting 12 rebounds is a good night even for a good rebounder. Hitting 4 or 5 threes is a good night for even a really good three-point shooter. But 5 assists is good, but it's not good to that level, you know, even for someone who's the secondary playmaker on most nights. Five assists is good, but it's not as good as 12 rebounds or as good as 5 3-pointers. So I would think that
what's the rebound equivalent? Let's just so we can what would you say is the rebound equivalent to 5 assists?
I would say like
for Julius, is it 8? Is it 10?
I put it at 8.5.
Well, because you're going to get tricky with it. All right, well, here let's just for fun. Let's go really deep into the weeds here.
Okay.
So, all right, I'm going to look at the last 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's look at the last 10 Laker wins. Okay. So, Brooklyn, Randall has 12 rebounds. Okay, they win. Against Chicago, he has 6 rebounds. So there's a counterexample. Against Boston, he has 14 rebounds. Against New York, 12. Against Indiana, just 4. That was the game where he scored pretty well, but he only played 20 minutes. Against Dallas, 15 in a win. Against San Antonio, 6. Against Sacramento, 14. And against Atlanta, 9. So for using the 8 or the 8.5 threshold, then he was over that in, let's see, 1, 2, basically all but 2 of the games. Now, Ingram, if you look at his game log in terms of assists, yeah, I do think 5 is a good number, but for a small forward who is sometimes on the ball and sometimes off the ball, I'm trying to think about league average for what assists would be, because this is not the LeBron James type, right, where he's got the ball the whole game, but I'm trying to think of like a, you know, Paul George who doesn't have the ball, same thing as a Westbrook.
Maybe like a DeRozan?
DeRozan, because, yeah, DeRozan's assists are – that's the thing, though. His usage rate is still going to be much higher than Ingram's.
Yeah, that's fair.
He's taking a lot more shots. But look, either way, your point is still interesting, though, because if you take Randall's rebounds just I don't know what it would take somebody smarter than both of us probably to really dive into what those approximations need to be for rebound totals and wins and assist numbers and wins. But I'm trying to work with the counterpoint you're making, which is an interesting one, because is there a number by which Ingram's assists need to reach? He averages 3.6 on the year, right? If he's averaging that many assists, then how many of those games is he not scoring? And sometimes the Lakers need him to score more than, for example, the 16 points that he scored last night,
right,
when he was serving more as the point guard. So I don't know what my point is, but I'm kind of interested by where you're going with it still.
Yeah, I'll have to go deeper into that. But kind of adjacent to that point, Luke was saying last night, we've seen Brandon play point in spots when D'Angelo Russell or Lonzo has been out in the past. And for the most part, he hasn't really had nearly the success that he had last night. And you don't want to overreact to one game and say, okay, well, he's figured it out. He can play point guard now. But at the same time, Luke said that the key to Brandon's success last night, as opposed to previous stints at point guard, was that he's pushing the pace. And I'm curious if you think that it's as simple as that. It's just getting the ball and going.
Yeah, I think that's part of it for sure, because that's where the Lakers are better, when they're getting stops and they're pushing it, getting easy baskets, because they're not as good in the half court, right? So those are all things that are fair. But I still want you to make more of the point you were trying to make last time, because I think I cut you off when I went into my own random recesses of my brain to look at Randall's rebounding total. So what else do you take out of the Ingram and the 5 assists?
Well, to me, it seems more, and I'd have to go deeper into this to see when, on a game-by-game basis, which ones he was the primary ball handler, like if Lonzo were out, and which one he was secondary and just, you know, doing his usual thing where they give him the ball and they run him through a lot of pick and rolls, but he's not the primary facilitator. But without that knowledge, I would say that when Brandon is passing the ball and passing the ball effectively, it tends to, at least on a anecdotal level, not, you know, with no data to back this up, at least off the top of my head, it seems to indicate that the team is passing the ball more generously. Just from what I remember, that because Lonzo's always going to be that guy who's spreading the ball around, getting guys shots, passing up his own good looks to get other guys great looks. And if Brandon is in that mode too, then it just seems to really get the engine going a lot better. And that's why I would think that if he gets a good assist total, like 5, does not be a great one like 8 or 9, but if he gets a good one like 5, it's indicative of the entire structure of the offense running a lot smoother.
Yeah, that is interesting. I like that point. So as you were saying that, it made me – did you happen to see Bradley Beal's comment the other day?
No, I didn't. What did he say?
So John Wall's been out for 3 games, right? And the Wizards have won all 3 games. And essentially their team assist total is much higher than it was when Wall was playing, even though Wall ranks 2nd or 3rd, whatever it is, in the league in assists.
Right.
So the quote, I'll just sort of paraphrase the quote, or I'm not going to fact check this right now on the fly, but he seemed to basically say that, yes, we're playing better collectively. The ball is moving all over the place. And when we do that, you know, it just makes our team better. And since people have kind of for a while wondered about the Wall and Beal dynamic, that's certainly not been a secret in the league. People have been discussing as to, you know, a little, like, I would say that I've heard more about that, Joey, than almost anything, than the CP3 Blake DeAndre triangle.
Yeah, right.
Right. That was so out there. Just that, and this is not a, you know, nobody knows other than those two. It's just that there have been varying reports over the years about, you know, how close that relationship is. And if it even matters if it is close, this isn't a judgment. It's just to say that when a player like Wall or like Ball are out, the team sometimes can compensate by having better ball movement collectively. But here's where I think that this case isn't applicable, and therefore what you're saying about Ingram makes more sense. Wall is a much more ball dominant point guard, even though he gets a ton of assists, and he's by nature then a unselfish player
right.
in the way that Chris Paul used to play. But that's not how Lonzo plays. Like, he gets his assist, you know, really as a product of general and overall unselfishness and wanting to quickly move the ball. Whereas a lot of times, you know, Wall is going to do his work by completely breaking down a defense, getting into the middle of the paint, drawing a defender, you know, in the same way that LeBron does, I guess. And so, to me, what I would rather have, all things being equal, just in terms of style, in terms of basketball style, I like the way that Lonzo plays even better. Because I think that truly is contagious for the rest of the players, whether that's an Ingram. And then it gets back into where you and I are going back and forth now on the data then, because does Lonzo's play make Ingram less selfish, or not even selfish is the right word, but does that make him, you know, does that become more contagious when Ingram has the ball versus last night in Brooklyn, where the Lakers just absolutely need Ingram to make plays because not many other guys can, you know? And so that's why, you know, I'm curious about the Lonzo effect both in and without games. But the, you know, we can I'm sure you can do an advanced, especially now that you're such an expert at using film within our Lakers.com articles, which I love, which I don't know how to do. when you could probably take a look at that and see what Ingram is as a ball handler when Lonzo's in and when he's out. And it's an interesting thing to go down, and I think we've now spent like at least 20 minutes on it, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, and just to put a bow on this, and we're going to spend like 22 minutes on it because I got to put a bow on it. I'm very curious, and I want to talk to some of the assistants when you guys get back from the road trip. I'm curious because we've heard Lonzo's passing is contagious. Lonzo's style of play is contagious, and that's been very obvious just watching these games. But at the same time, I'm curious, what part of his game is contagious? Like, what are the coaches seeing in the other players that they have leached off of Lonzo? Because when we talk about Luke saying that the key to Brandon's big night last night, passing-wise, was him pushing the pace, there were a couple plays last night that he got an assist off of when Brooklyn would make a basket and Brandon would get the ball out of the hoop and immediately step out of bounds and push the pace as if he was on a fast break, but it was coming off of a missed basket. Or I'm sorry, off of a made basket. And that's something that Lonzo does that very few players in the NBA do right now, is push the pace off of an opponent's made basket. And we were seeing Brandon do that last night. And so and there was one play in particular that stands out in my mind where there were like 3 nets still on the Lakers or on their own attacking side of the floor when Brandon was passing midcourt. And that very much reminded me of Lonzo Ball, even though Lonzo wasn't in, it was obviously Brandon doing it. And so that to me is Lonzo's contagion kind of spreading throughout the identity of the team, even when he's not in. And I'm curious to see what other areas that the coaches and players see in this.
Yes, that's it. Let me put a bow on your bow, and then you can go in the next because just to react to that.
Yeah.
So the coaches, right, the coaches looked at this roster before the season started, and they said, okay, we're going to have to run. We're going to have to take advantage of our athleticism in the front court, and we're going to have to get stops and score off that because we don't have a lot of shooting. We don't have a lot of experience. Go get 25 points, half court guys. And so we just have to force the players into this collective style. And I think the best testament to the coaching has been, even with Lonzo out for these last couple of weeks, and granted, it took him a while, okay? It took him 8 straight losses, essentially, to figure this out to some degree. There just was not that same energy. And I think that some of the players, and this is for a good reason, I think they thought that when Lonzo was out, oh, we can't do that as well. And they were right for a while. But eventually, I think they kept on him. They kept watching film. They kept it sort of saying, look, you other guys here are capable too. Lonzo's not around. He's not coming back these next couple of games. You have to do this. And whether that's Ingram or whether it's Josh Hart, who I thought was possibly even the MVP of last night's game, when you consider what the type of energy that he brought on both ends, 15 points, career-high 14 rebounds, a steal, a couple assists, was just everywhere. When you consider that, and you didn't even get much from Kuzma last night, 6 points, 3 rebounds, right? You didn't get much from Clarkson. He had 3 threes that were at a big time, but other than that, was 0 for 11. KCP was 0 for 5. But you had other guys stepping into that void and playing that way that they want to play. And so that, again, is the encouraging thing, that they aren't totally reliant on Lonzo to do that, even though that's part of what dictates how Lonzo's going to play.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. Now that we've put our bows on that, just wanted to wrap up with Josh Hart, who you just touched on. Like you said, 15 and 14, just a great night for a rookie guard and a guy who's really good on the boards. We've seen Josh kind of tip games with his rebounding. What do you think about Josh? And he had a rough stretch beforehand. His previous 7 games, he was averaging 4 points and 2 rebounds, which is just very un-Josh Hart-like to be that absent of the game. How are you feeling about the way Josh has been playing?
Well, look, I'm gonna qualify the fact that the reasons why that he was quote unquote struggling, and Luke Walton even said that he had been struggling some. But what he was asked to do for the most part of the last couple of weeks was come off the bench, you know, play a little bit of defense and take no more than 1 to 4 shots, you know, for over the course of the last time he took more than 5 shots was the 19th against Indiana, when he took 8. And in that game, he played 33 minutes, and I guess you could point to that's the last time that he had 9 points and 5 rebounds, et cetera. So Hart is a guy, what did he do at Villanova? He started games, he finished games, he played 30 minutes a night minimum, and he really got to exert himself on the play with his rebounding, with his defense that wears on people, with his three-point shooting. And I do think that he's still learning how to do that in pockets off the bench, and it's not easy. Here's another way to put it. It's difficult to be a role player off the bench a lot of times in the NBA. What's easier is to be what Clarkson does, where you come in, you get the ball, you get to run into some screen roll action, you know, you really get involved that way. Nance, where you're the guy setting the screen and you're switching 1 to 5 on defense. I think it's easier to get lost as kind of a wing that's essentially basically just once in a while shooting a 3 and then once in a while defending a backup wing, you know, that may not need to be defended. And this is why, to me, Joey, and I'm, you know, it's all going to depend on personnel and it's going to depend on growth and stuff. But Hart, I love in a starting role. It all depends on who's on your team. But when he's given those type of steady minutes, I just feel like his impact on the game, it fits what he's good at better. And as opposed to a guy that just has one specific really good skill set, you know, that can kind of be a bench rotation player, I think Hart's, you know, pretty good at a lot of things. And therefore, when you're getting 35 minutes in a start, that's tailor-made for him to you know, be comfortable like he is once again. So that's a long way of saying it. But let me transition in our last thing, because I just got a text from the Lakers from the PR. And it looks like Ingram is going to be questionable tomorrow, Joey, with right groin tightness.
That's a tough one.
Now, Well, yeah. So I can say this now. So we wanted to wait and see what the training staff said about it. But essentially, Ingram had to get treatment right after the game, and so he didn't come out for a while. And I'm not sure what he said in this. I actually didn't catch his post game comments, but it does look like that groin tightened up on him. So no Lonzo. We'll see about Ingram tomorrow. It's going to be tough, but you certainly hope that groin isn't something that lingers, because you know Ingram he's had some stuff in his quads, and you wonder if it's related. So stay tuned for that. I just want to make sure we got that in.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, long term is definitely more important. Obviously, you want to beat OKC in a national TV game, but if that groin's going to linger, that will affect you down the road. Not necessarily down the road, but at least for the season. And you definitely don't want that. Anything else before we go, Mike?
I think so, man. I miss Los Angeles. I hope you've been taking care of it for me well. And I will be looking forward to that, even though we'll be missing the Super Bowl while I'm here.
It's too bad. All right, we'll see you on Monday, Mike.
All right, man. Have a good one.
Oh, did he put Person in the popcorn machine?
Yeah, Person ran at him out of control.